Evil exposed. The Bible points out that God is impersonal, and Mary Baker Eddy supports that statement with a variety of quotations. Therefore, if one is going to focus on exposing evil, it must be in an impersonal way. Jesus spoke in parables in order to prevent the teachings from being personalized. He was discussing ideas and not persons. If one expects to advance in ridding consciousness of evil so that there will be a greater opportunity for a focus on good, perfection, the true nature of God, which includes his reflection man, then there is no alternative but to forget about person, including ourselves, and focus on the topic. Mary Baker Eddy stated that her most wonderful healings and instantaneous healings took place when she got, quote, Mary out of the way. It is stated by Mary Baker Eddy, as well as another great messenger of God, Frederick Rosson, and his work resulted in many individuals being healed, and they both indicate that if one discovers the specific problem, the specific cause, that the healing will be much faster and more complete. Mr. Rosson has actually written a book which is like an encyclopedia of how to heal hundreds of ailments. I believe it's like 1,315 forms of discord, detailing the specific nature of the discord and its counterfact, which is what Mary Baker Eddy states that is needed in order to cure any problem. There is a process, a systematized procedure which will assist one in covering all the bases, in doing the three-step process of analyzing, exposing, and eradicating. This is brought out clearly by Maria Brunson in her seminar series, wherein she details that one should review the thought, speech, and action that is taking place in one's own consciousness regarding the primary features or nature of the seven synonymous terms which represent the primary qualities of God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. She even suggests that one could start with love, or wherever they're thinking, they could start at that particular place of the seven synonymous terms in the days of creation order, which is the order just stated, and examine for the purpose of analyzing, exposing, eradicating the evil, the error, the discord, the ailment, whatever it may be. So one could start wherever their thought is and work backwards and forwards from that particular spot. With the end result being that all of the seven synonymous terms and their primary features would be covered, so that one is convinced that they are in compliance or bringing themselves into compliance as they are doing this research mentally, such that by the time that it's all finished, it should be obvious where the evil is, what needs to be done to expose it, which of course is really the analysis. The analysis is exposing it because it's research to find out what the problem is. This is not referring to what appears to physically or visibly be seen as the discord, or even something that is felt if it's internal, physically, or a relationship that would be mental. What is referred to is that one must approach the problem at the highest level possible. Einstein stated that one cannot solve a problem if they work on the same level where the problem was created. Mr. Rawson states that one should immediately deny the reality of any discord, deny that it is real, by making a very short statement. There is no broken arm, for example. There is no accident. There is no loss of vision. There is no cancer. There is no cold. There is no misplacement. There is no loss of memory. There is no delay. Whatever the specific problem seems to be, he proposes that one immediately make a valid, firm statement, such as those given as examples. if one wants to work from the standpoint that God is all and God is good, God is perfect, God is spirit, and spirit is the only substance, and substance is flawless, substance is pureness, substance is transparent, transparency itself. Like the Indians have referred to a beautiful lake reflecting the surroundings, that's what we need to do. We need to still calm our thought so that we can be visualizing the beauty of perfection, the beauty of our seeing the result of the reflection of God's true nature. And one way that it can be done, and Mr. Rawson certainly does strongly suggest that what he is proposing is strictly one way to do it. Everyone needs to develop their own method that works for them. But the method he is stating is that we immediately state that it doesn't exist. And then he explains why in spiritual terms. So this is elevating one's thought from being at the lowest level, where Mary Baker Eddy describes it on page 115 of Science and Health as depravity. So first of all, we need to deny the depravity level as being real, and then we immediately go up to the next level, which is the moral level. And what Mr. Rawson does in his encyclopedia is to state what the spiritual function is of whatever appears to be wrong. For example, if one would have a headache, he would cite what the function of the head is, the function of the nerves, which supposedly communicates things from the brain to the body. And of course, the function is a spiritual function, not a material function. So he switches from, or elevates from, stating that there is no such thing as whatever the discord is, to stating the counterfact. All this is explained much more clearly and completely, comprehensively, in his book, which is entitled True Prayer. In fact, the title, the real complete title, is Healing or Treatment by True Prayer. We must approach everything from an impersonal basis. In other words, we don't say, my arm is not broken. One could instead say, there is no broken bone. Man's bones are spiritual, reflecting substance, which gives permanence to every idea. All ideas of God are permanent and perfect. It never happened, for all is spiritual. Man never fell, or whatever the trouble is due to. He always was positioned in mind, spiritual and perfect. Then he suggests that one work for circulation of the blood against any symptoms necessary such as torn muscles, or arteries or veins, pain, high temperature. This is all quoted from his encyclopedia, the book of which the title was given a few minutes ago. Mary Baker Eddy states that one must deny the error and explain the reason why. And that's exactly what Frederick Rosten is doing in his encyclopedia. One must keep in mind that often the visible problem is not representing the cause of the problem that appears in a particular physical way. Mary Baker Eddy states that if one is sensitive to letting something bother them, it is very likely to be manifested in the weakest part of their body or their experience, their thought. It's like a water leak in a roof. You might have a roof that has water coming down through the ceiling in one room, but if you check immediately above where that water leak is, you might find that it was traveling from a completely different part of the roof. Water leak coming in from the, you know, from the sky in one part, and then traveling underneath the outer roof before it comes down through the area where it can leak into a room. And that's exactly how it works with what Mary Baker Eddy has described, just mentioned. What we see as a symbol of a problem does not indicate the real source, usually, often. So often, or usually, one could say the source is a different problem. One could be thinking about a problem and focusing on that, and as a result, they have an accident. So they don't analyze, you know, what caused the accident from a standpoint that are obvious human things, but look for something in the bigger picture. Bicknell Young said often he had people come to him wanting to get healing for their business. He was very successful as a Christian Science practitioner, and he's been referred to as the dean of Christian Science practice. You know, teaching others . In fact, he had so much popular following, and the Mother Church did not want him to be a teacher for their own personal reasons, but they were kind of forced to let him be the normal teacher in the 1937 class. And in fact, there's a book published about that class with the teaching that he conducted. A lot of wonderful ideas there. Anyway, one that I was just referring to is a lot of people would come to him for healing in their business. And he would say many of them didn't know their business. Mary Baker Eddy stated that the reason that Jesus was able to be so divine was because the magnitude of his humanity. She said that enabled his divinity. So he expressed love in human ways to the maximum, which enabled him to show that the human could meet the divine by magnifying itself or applying it in ways that were needed by individuals. Mr. Rawson says that our primary purpose on this earth is to make other people happy. Joy, bringing joy to someone else that's in need. And certainly the feeling is wonderful when one is able to meet someone else's need, especially if they can do it in an anonymous way. Because then one is not seeking self-aggrandizement. They're not feeding one's ego, but their focus is on the need of the other person. It's common for wealthy people to give money or use money to build something like a classroom or a building in a university or a library. And most of them want their name on the building. When Andrew Carnegie was negotiating with Mr. Pullman for a joint venture of railroads and railroad cars, and of course Carnegie had the steel factory, the first question from Mr. Pullman was, what would we call the company? They were going to build railroad cars. And of course, Andrew Carnegie, being very astute about the value of one's ego, said, well, of course, we would call it the Pullman Coach Company. And of course, that was music to Mr. Pullman's ear, and as a result, they made the deal. Setting ego aside is the first thing that one must do if they're going to be focusing on something besides themselves. Mr. Rawson states that sensitiveness is a form of ego. I'd never thought of that before, but it obviously is logical when one thinks about it, because what does sensitive mean? It means one being sensitive about themselves, or about something that they care about sincerely. I don't know, it could be a physical object. I know when I was in college and bought my first new car, I was very proud of it. I kept that sucker washed. It was always spotless. And if somebody would scratch it or throw a bucket of mud on it or something, I certainly would be sensitive about that. So I was concerned about the car, sensitive about the car. So we must get away from the focus on materiality and focus on qualities. One of the greatest practitioners that I knew personally for many years stated one short phrase, qualities, qualities, all is qualities. I was with her at her home one time, and the Olympics were on. It was the Summer Olympics. They were showing the Olympic competition for gymnastics. And we were passing from one room to another, and one room we were passing through had the television on for the Olympics. And she said, "Look at the grace of that individual." Immediately she was translating what was visible to the spiritual quality. Wentworth Winslow, another definitely messenger of God, he was in the healing practice for 35 years, and one of his healings was raising an individual from the belief of death. Anyway, he wrote 4 volumes of books, and the word God is in each title. It's only 3 or 4 words in each title. I believe one was Let God Do It. Another one is God Will Do It. God Did It. Anyway, the 4 books are basically a focus on God. And in fact, Mr. Rawson had a wonderful healing by just stating, of course, obviously with understanding and conviction, that there is nothing but God. That is his focus throughout his writings, nothing but God. And he and another Christian Scientist were standing at a window, gazing out for probably having a discussion. And you know how it is, you might walk around in a room and thoughts come forth, or you might look out a window and to get your thought off of person and maybe looking at the sky or a large expanse of water, you know, an ocean or a beautiful lake or whatever. And then things will be revealed to you. Well, he and this other noted Christian Science practitioner were looking out a window, and this was back in the early 1900s when cars were just getting into the population for residential, you know, for private use. And there was a cart, a wooden cart, full of rocks, being pulled by an animal, I don't know, a mule or oxen or something, maybe a horse. And it had two wheels on it, and it was full of rocks. And the driver had stopped to go around to the back where the tailgate was to check it. He must have heard a sound or something, gave him the idea he better double check that gate on the back end of the trailer. Anyway, while he was back there looking it over, something startled the animal that was pulling the cart, and it reared up and dumped the entire load of rocks on this individual. Frederick Rawson and the other gentleman that was looking out the window observed the entire event. And as soon as it occurred, you know, the individual was totally covered up with rocks. The one that was back there that was examining it, that was the driver of the cart. Totally covered up. Totally not visible anymore. And Frederick Rawson says, obviously, with spiritual understanding and conviction, with a total focus on what he was thinking and saying, he said, there is nothing but God. As soon as he said that, the man jumped up through the rocks, on top of the rocks, and walked away free. So in that case, he did not even deny the accident. He went immediately to God, stating the truth about God. In other words, there's no competition, there's no opposition. It's only God. And obviously, with that understanding, it includes that he knew very clearly that God was spirit, and spirit is the only substance. Substance cannot be injured because substance is flawless, pureness. He knew that mind couldn't create an accident. There's nothing that could create discord. There's only one mind. And that mind is immortal, not mortal. There's only one substance, and that is spirit, not matter. Love is wholeness. It can't be injured. Nothing can be out of place. There can't be any broken bones. All of this was condensed down into the simple statement, there is nothing but God. And he full well knew and had a very good understanding of what God is. Exposing evil is exposing anything that is unlike God and curing the problem with the counterfact, making sure that the analysis was not just analyzing what is obvious, but looking for the big picture. Is there some big project I'm working on, and this so-called accident, as an example, is merely an effort of a suggestion to be preventing the project from being completed, or from delaying it, or diverting it, obstructing it in some way, some kind of interference? The political scene is famous for this. Decoys. Gee, when they want to pass a bill in Congress, they give it a name that is the exact opposite of what it really is doing. The opposite. The bill that they wanted to pass was for the sole purpose of encouraging people to register in this massive computer database. And the whole purpose was to find out all they could about everyone in the country and put it into a computer system so they could track them. So they could track the people. Evil works in so many devious ways that we have to make sure that when we're doing the analysis, we are not distracted and going down the wrong path in determining what the problem is, what the real source is. And the more we know about God, the easier it is to see what is unlike God that has edged its way into our lives or into the lives of anyone that one might be assisting as a practitioner. And again, it must be kept impersonal. The attack on an individual, for example, by politicians, is merely a distraction to keep people from thinking about what their real purpose is. That's the way evil works. It works over here on the right because it doesn't want you to look on the left. It accuses of exactly what it is guilty of itself. We have to deny that any evil is a part of our consciousness. It cannot come from God's man. It cannot come from God, and therefore it can't come from God's reflection. A source cannot be a source unless it has a manifestation. So the source and the manifestation are one, because neither could exist without the other. It's not one and the other, it's one includes the other. Think about supply and demand. How could one even think about a need for something unless they knew it existed? I mean, they had a concept of it, so it has to exist. Somebody could be hungry. Maybe they're stranded out in the desert or in a remote place without food or water, shelter, clothing, whatever. Something that they need. Well, they know that the thing that they need exists, or they could not conceive of it being a need. And whatever it is that exists, it has to be accompanied with a demand for it, or it wouldn't be of any value. A supply is only of value if there's a need for it. A need can only be valid if there's a supply for it. So one has to understand that need and supply are unified. They're unified. They're one. Jesus certainly proved that, as well as many other professionals involved in healing, in the healing practice. He fed 4,000 at one time and 5,000 at another. He, like many people that get so involved in what they're doing that they may not think about what is normal, such as eating or drinking or whatever, another event they're supposed to be involved in, they are totally focused. Well, Jesus was totally focused. But as soon as he realized the need, he was able to instantly solve it based on the unity of need and supply. And that group of 4,000 and another time 5,000, they didn't back in those days count women and children. They only counted men. Boy, wouldn't the feminists attack that idea? You know, there's a feeling today that one sex or one race or one group, whatever they call themselves, is more important than another group. That's personal. If we're going to solve the problem of discord, it has to be based on an impersonal view. Looking through the lens of spirit, not looking through the lens of personal evaluation, personal judgment, trying to normalize things that are unlike God. All this stuff about a woke civilization, they're trying to say that if you wake up and reject everything that is wholesome and godlike, then, you know, you're really head of the crowd. Gender. They're trying to say there's a huge number of genders and choose what you want to be. We need to know that there is no gender. God doesn't talk about gender. There is one man. It is generic. It is not gender defined. It's generic. The womanhood and the manhood qualities for someone to be really understanding God, they need to understand that womanhood and manhood are joined together, and that a complete person is one that is expressing both the love and tenderness and kindness of the love of a woman and the strength and the courage and so forth that are normally attributed to a man. One that is a complete image of God is expressing both manhood and womanhood qualities. One cannot look to another individual to be complete. The only source is the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. That's immortal mind. Incorporeal, immortal, divine, supreme, and infinite. Not limited. That is the source, the real source of man. And when we look to mind, mind represents intelligence, wisdom and knowing, and creativeness, action, obviously omnipresent. God couldn't have competition. There can't be something else present besides God. These insurance companies are such a fraud on the public. When they supposedly give insurance against catastrophes, and then they exclude things that they think are acts of God. The only act of God is perfection, which is ongoing, continuous, uninterrupted. Uninterrupted by a belief of a storm or an earthquake or anything else. And this terrible weather that is experienced by various regions, it's all man-made. Man wants to control the weather, so they seed the clouds. In some areas, it's hard to ever see the sky because they're seeding the clouds all the time. You can even look up there and see all the garbage coming out of the back end of the airplanes. It's a corrupt. The whole thing is corrupt. Geoengineering done with the purpose of controlling population. They're trying to genocide the population. We have to know that there is no genocide. Life is in God. It's not under the control of man. It's not under the control of humans. It's not under the control of airplanes that are trying to spread all this stuff, the fluoride in water that they've been doing for decades. All of this is trying to reduce the value of God's idea. It can't be done. We have to know that it can't be done. There is no fluoride. There is no element that can make man sick. There is no pandemic. There is no COVID. This stuff is all manufactured. It is not real. The fraud about it is being exposed. But we have to make sure that we don't think about individuals. They're just being mesmerized or hypnotized, even if it's self-hypnosis. They mandate masks, yet they don't wear them. If you catch them when they're not doing a photo op, it's not normal for one to breathe what comes out of their nose or their mouth. No, that's what goes out into the atmosphere, and we breathe in the oxygen. We have to know that there is no power, and keep in mind that power is accomplishment. That's the definition of power. It's accomplishment. It's a measurement of accomplishment. Mary Baker Eddy states that the only power obtainable is the good we do and embody. That's it. The good we do and embody is the only power obtainable. In other words, accomplishing good is what gives power. That is the measurement of power. So the creativeness enables action. You have to have an idea before you can have action. And it comes from creativeness, which is quality of mind, the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. And so that creativeness gives one the incentive to be taking action, and the action ends up being measured as accomplishment if it's in the right direction, and that is what gives power. So God is all power because He is all accomplishment. He is all creativeness. He, not being a man, but just a generic way to refer to God. Because God is both mother and father. Mother, father, God. God is all the qualities that are normally attributed to a woman and a man. God is all. He's not part. He's not half. Whenever we try to expose evil, we have to not think about person. We have to think about the parable procedure that Jesus followed when he was teaching. He taught by parable. Stamp and Moss are two wonderful authors that analyze the parables of Jesus. I believe there was 41 of them, and they did it in, I believe it's 11 volumes. So something that Jesus said that was maybe, you know, a few sentences or a few paragraphs, they would write pages on it, analyzing this from a spiritual perspective. Such valuable work that they did. None of it is personal. It's all impersonal. But a thorough analysis of those parables is such a beautiful teaching. Such great instruction in learning more about God and God's, which includes God's manifestation, which is man, which is all existence. The bottom line is, there is no evil, because God is all and God is good, which is the opposite, the counterfact of evil. And God is omnipresent. So there's no place where evil could exist. There's no place where an accident could be. Because God is principle, which is all harmonious. And God is love. And love is the harmonizer of all action. It's like the lubricant that makes everything work together in a totally, absolutely smooth, frictionless operation. God is all there is. There is nothing but God. Amen.